So in the Bible, after the flood, you have Abraham is called by God, and God promises Abraham to bless him, to make him a great nation, and to bring the Messiah, the Christ, the Savior of the world, into the world through Abraham's seed. Then Abraham has a son, Isaac. And Isaac has a son, Jacob. And the promise, the covenant, is passed on from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob. God comes to Jacob in a vision and changes his name to Israel. Okay? So he was born Jacob, but his name is changed by God to Israel. Now, Israel has 12 sons, the sons of Israel, or the children of Israel. And this is where all the Jews come from. All the people of Israel come from Israel, Jacob, Israel, who had 12 sons that became the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, one of the sons of Israel, or Jacob, is Joseph. And that's where our story takes up in Genesis chapter 37, verse 1. And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. So Jacob lives in Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old. Now notice that. Joseph is 17 years old. That's going to be important later on. Was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. So Joseph is kind of a tattletale. He's like the youngest son. And he's daddy's boy. And whenever his brothers misbehave, he goes running and telling daddy about it. All right? So they hate him. All right? Now, verse 3. Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a coat of many colors. So now, not only is Joseph a tattletale, but now he is shown preference. He has a garment that says to his brothers, I'm the most important one out of all of you. All right? So, verse 4, when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. So far, things are both well on one level, but not so good on the other level. On the good level, Joseph is favored. On the not so good level, his brothers hate him. Now, verse 5. Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. He said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field. And lo, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. So basically what he says is, we were binding sheaves in the field, my sheaf rose up, and your sheaves bowed down to my sheaf. Wow, that dream was not calculated to make his brothers more fond of him. And his brethren said to him, shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words.
Verse 9, and he dreamed yet another dream and told it to his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. Behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. All right, now notice the difference between spiritually alert people and spiritually unalert people. Is that Joseph's brothers were spiritually unalert. They were dull-witted. And so they just envied him and resented him. But even though Jacob was annoyed at Joseph about the dream, shall your mother and I and your brethren bow down before you? He was annoyed about the dream. Yet it says in the text that he observed the saying. That is, he said, there must be something to this. And so he kept it in his mind and he held it there for future reference. You know, sometimes when you hear God's word, it doesn't seem to make sense at first. And you might be tempted to dismiss it as something that's just not relevant to your life. But the wise Christian keeps these things in their mind and in their heart, even when they don't understand them, because it may just be, and it most surely will, to be honest, that later on, that truth will play a very significant role in your life and in the comfort of your heart as a Christian. All right, so he observed the saying. Now in verse 12, and his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. Israel said to Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said unto him, here am I. And he said to him, go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron and came to Shechem. So basically what's happening is Jacob and his family are nomads. That is, they are shepherds. And when you're a shepherd, you live in a tent. And you have to travel wherever there's grass for your flocks. So therefore you have no real home base. You're always on the move. You're always going to the next place where there's grass to feed your flocks. So Joseph's brothers are out with the flocks, goodness knows where, down by Shechem. And Jacob says, go and check out on your brothers and see how they're doing and bring me word again. All right, so he gets sent on an errand to check the welfare of his brothers and the sheep. And verse 15, a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what are you looking for? What seekest thou? And he said, I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks. So Joseph is wandering around, doesn't know which way to turn. He's like in the middle of the wilderness, doesn't know where his brothers are, doesn't know where Shechem is, doesn't know where Hebron is. He meets a guy, and the guy puts him right. He says, and the man said, they are departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. Here he comes, let's kill him. All right, that's what his brothers want to do. They want to kill him. And they said to one another, behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him, cast him into some pit, and we will say, some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. All right, now notice this is the third time the dreams are mentioned. This is important. The dreams that God gave to Joseph were a prophecy of the future. Joseph didn't understand it at the time. The brethren certainly didn't understand it. And even Jacob, who considered the dream, he didn't understand it. But what God was doing was foretelling the fact that Joseph would be God's instrument to save the family from starvation. Right, this is what's going to happen. It's a prophecy of Joseph being raised into a position of honor in order to be able to help his family in a time of great famine. Right, that's important. So this dream stuff is not just incidental. The dreams are the prophecy concerning God's plan for Joseph and his family. All right, good. Now, verse 21. And Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands, and said, let us not kill him. And Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again. So one of the brothers, Reuben, he hears what the rest of the guys are planning, and he steps in, and he's going to try to rescue his brother from being slain. So he says, let's throw him into this pit. Now, what's a pit? In the Bible, in the Old Testament, whenever it says pit, what it's talking about is a cistern. What's a cistern? That might as well just say pit, right? Well,
Well, at the house, the big white, yeah. Without a lid.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, there you go. And a cistern was used to collect rainwater in large quantities because the land of Israel, the land of Canaan, was very scarce with water. There was not a lot of fresh water in the land of Israel. So in order to digging well, in addition to digging wells, they also dug pits or cisterns that would, during the rainy season, fill up with water. And all over the land, there were these pits, these cisterns. And many times they were empty, but sometimes they were full, depending upon what season of the year it was. So there were wells where there was water under the ground that came up, and there were cisterns, which were pits that rainwater would fall into. So let's throw them into the pit. And it came, verse 23, and it came to pass, when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph of his coat of many colors that was on him. So they took his honored coat. And they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. So he's down there in the bottom of this pit, looking up at the small hole up in the top, all by himself, in this pit without his coat of many colors. Verse 25. And they sat down to eat bread. And they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. So there's a caravan of Ishmaelites. When my kids, Catherine and Juliana, and Peter and Timmy and Stephen, when they were little and they misbehaved, I would say, all right, I'm going to sell you to the Ishmaelites. You know, and it was from this story. All right, keep acting that way, and I'm selling you to the Ishmaelites. Don't sell us to the Ishmaelites. So the Ishmaelites were here. Let us sell him, verse 27, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh. And his brethren were content. So that's a good idea. Then there passed by Midianite merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph to Egypt. So the Ishmaelites buy him for 20 pieces of silver. Notice that there's a parallel between the brothers of Joseph who sell Joseph for 20 pieces of silver, and Judas Iscariot, who betrays Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. So you see this betrayal that takes place. And so Joseph here is a type of Christ who is betrayed by his brethren, just like Jesus was betrayed by Judas Iscariot. All right, so, verse 29. And Reuben returned unto the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit. And he rent his clothes, he tore his clothes, and he returned to his brethren and said, the child is not, and I, whither shall I go? What's going on here? And they took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of many colors and they brought it to their father and said, this have we found. Know now whether it is thy son's coat or no. And he knew it and said, it is my son's coat. An evil beast hath devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces, torn in pieces. So, when Reuben realizes that Joseph is not there, he goes into a state of panic. And the rest of the brethren, they say, all right, let's dip his coat of many colors in blood. So they kill one of the sheep. They dip the coat in blood and they send it off to the father. And they say, we found this in the wilderness. Do you think it belongs to Joseph? And he's looking at this and he realizes that it's his son's coat. And so he draws the conclusion that Joseph is dead. Right? Now the brothers, they think they've gotten away with it. Right? But nobody ever gets away with anything because there is a judgment coming. Alright. So verse 34. And Jacob rent his clothes. Rent means tore. And put on sackcloth, that's burlap, all right, sackcloth upon his loins, and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, I will go down into the grave unto my son mourning. Thus his father wept for him. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guards. So now, as we end chapter 37, Joseph is a slave in the house of Potiphar. And Potiphar was a high official. He was the captain of the guard. The captain of the guard. So he's an army officer. All right. Now, we're going to skip chapter 38 and go right to chapter 39. Because chapter 38 is an interlude. So go right into chapter 39, verse 1. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt. And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph. And here's the interesting thing. Now, do you think Joseph is having fun? I don't think so. One minute he's the favorite son of a great nomadic sheep, Israel or Jacob. And now he's a slave in a foreign country, Egypt. But it says here, it says that the Lord was with Joseph. And he was a prosperous man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So everything that Joseph does is a success, because the Lord is blessing him. And Potiphar notices this. He says, look at this guy. This guy is like a talent. He's got skills, right? So, verse 4, Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass, from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. All right, so everything that Joseph does turns out good. Potiphar makes him the head of the whole plantation. All right, and he sees this blessing, and from the moment that he makes him head over all things, Potiphar's household gets richer and richer and richer. And then, just as an afterthought, at the end of verse 6, it says, oh, by the way, Joseph was very handsome. That's what that means. A goodly person and well-favored. He was very handsome. Right, and that's what that means. Verse 7. And it came to pass after these things, that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. And she said, lie with me. All right, so we just learned that he's very handsome. He's tall. He's got a great complexion. He's pretty. He's desirable. He's a good catch, right? And so Potiphar's wife, she wants him. And so she casts her eyes upon him, gives him the flirtatious look, and says, lie with me. She wants to have sexual relations with him. Verse 8. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? All right? So Joseph basically rebukes her and tells her, listen, your husband has made me the chief of everything. The only thing that he has kept from me is you, because you're his wife. He says, now, how can I do this thing that you're suggesting and sin against God? So Joseph does not want to sin against God by committing adultery. One of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not commit adultery. What does this mean? We should fear and love God that we may lead a chaste and decent life in word and deed, and each love and honor his spouse. All right, that is the sixth commandment. How can I sin, do this great wickedness, and sin against God? That's an important verse, verse 9. And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, she didn't get the hint, right? She spake to him day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business. And there was none of the men of the house there within. So in the course of his running the household, he happens one day to go into the house when nobody else is there but him and Potiphar's wife. So, And it says in verse 12, she caught him by his garment. She grabbed hold of his clothes and said, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. All right. Now, well, let me refrain from commenting on this until we get a little further on. But notice that she grabs him and says, lie with me, and he runs away, and all she's got is his garment, his robe, and he runs away. All right. So it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, see, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his Lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake concerning him, after this manner did thy servant to me, and his wrath was kindled. All right, let's stop there. All right, so what's going on here? She has lusted. Finally, she grabs him and says, lie with me. He runs away. So what does she do? There's a proverb that says, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And in her pride, her wounded pride, she decides that she's going to accuse him of trying to rape her. She's going to lie, and she's going to make herself look like the victim,
And by the way, this is very popular in the modern world. People make themselves, not just in sexual matters, but in all kinds of things. If you can make yourself into a victim, you can make accusations against people that you want to hurt. And as a result of that, you can do damage to people you don't like. All you got to do is play the victim card, you know. And this is very popular in today's world. People will lie and they will play the victim card in order to destroy somebody else's life. But here's the thing that always has to be kept in mind. God sees everything that's going on. And there is a special place in the deepest pits of hell for people who lie and make false accusations. They may get away with it all throughout their life in this world, but they will pay with eternal damnation for the lies that have ruined other people's lives. So, this woman, she was the perpetrator, but when she got frustrated, she decided to play the victim and lie and cry rape. And so the husband now, he's like, he believes his wife, and his wrath is kindled. That means he was angry. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison. So now Joseph, not only is he a slave in Egypt, but now he's in a dungeon. Right? He's in a dungeon. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. And the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. So everywhere that Joseph ends up, everybody recognizes his gifts, and that everything he touches seems to turn to gold. And so here's the keeper of the prison, the warden, if you will. And so he hands over to Joseph the whole responsibility of running the prison. And so everywhere that Joseph goes, God blesses him and uses him. You know, and here's the thing to remember. There are times in our lives when things that are not good happen to us. God permits these things. Just like he could have rescued Joseph from his brothers. He could have rescued Joseph from Potiphar's wife. He could have rescued Joseph from the prison. But God has a plan that is invisible to us, but that he knows quite well. And of course, the story will develop and we'll see how all this works out. But the point is that when God permits you to go through times of struggle and trial, continue to trust in God and to do right according to the word. And God will see you through and will use you even in those troublous times to be a help, a blessing, and a comfort to other people. Sometimes we have no idea why God permits certain things to happen to us. But in the long run, we learn that God's hand was even in the negative things that happen in our lives. You know, when I was a little boy, I was involved in a car accident. And in that car accident, I went through the front windshield of the car. My whole head went through the front windshield of the car. And I was cut from the top of my forehead here all the way across my face like this.
So I had to go through all grammar school with a big red scar across my face, just like a big slash right across my face, and went from here all the way up to the top of my ear. And that scar made me have an inferiority complex. I thought that I was ugly. And somehow, through that experience and through the character that it built in me, God worked in my life to bring me to where I am now. Right? And part of the thing that he used was the challenges that were put before me because of the scar that I had on my face. So, anyway, at the time that things happen, you don't always understand why God is permitting a thing to happen. But if you determine in your heart to submit to His will, to keep the faith, and to do what is right, God will continue to bless your life, and He will eventually show you how the tough things in your life helped you and strengthened you and made you able to sympathize with and to comfort others, and to be a blessing to other people. All right. So there he is, but God permits bad things to happen to Joseph, but in the midst of dealing with the bad things, he's also blessing and using Joseph in many ways. All right, now, chapter 40. It came to pass after these things that the butler of the king and his baker offended their lord the king of Egypt, and Pharaoh was wroth against two of his officers and against his chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers, and he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard into the prison and the place where Joseph was bound. So the baker and the butler, they get into trouble. And they get thrown into the jail where Joseph is. Right? And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they continued a season in the ward. That is, they were in jail for a while. And they dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream in one night. Each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. And Joseph came into them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his lord's house, saying, "Whereof look ye so sadly today?" And they said unto him, "We have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you." So he says, "God knows what your dreams mean. Tell me your dream, and God will reveal it to me." And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said unto him, "In my dream, behold, a vine was before me, and in the vine three branches, and it was as though it budded, and her blossom shot forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup unto Pharaoh's hand." And Joseph said unto him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee to thy place, and thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler." So you're going to get restored to your position. "But think on me when it shall be well with thee,
and show kindness, I pray thee, to me, and make mention of me to Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into this dungeon." Alright, so basically Joseph says, "Don't worry, you're going to be restored to your position as Pharaoh's butler. But when you get back into your position, don't forget about me. Tell Pharaoh about me. I'm unjustly stuck in this dungeon." So, when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said unto Joseph, "I also was in my dream, and behold, I had three white baskets on my head. In the uppermost part basket, there was all manner of baked meats for Pharaoh. And the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head." And so he's got three baskets on his head. And from the top baskets, the birds are carrying away all the baked goods out of the top basket. And Joseph answered and said, "This is the interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree, and the bird shall eat thy flesh from off thee." Talk about bad news, huh? He expected good news because of what the butler, you know, the butler got good news. So he's like, "This is my dream." And Pharaoh's going to chop your head off, hang your body on a tree so that the birds can eat your flesh off your bones. Yikes. "Came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants. And he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. And he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again, and he gave the cup unto Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted unto him. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forget him." So the guy gets restored to his position, and he forgets all about Joseph. So now Joseph is stinking in the prison, and the butler is back in his position. And that's where we'll leave it off today. But the point of the story is, something's going to happen. Right? All of this stuff that's been going on, both good and bad, is heading toward something big and something very important. And that's the way you need to think about your challenges and your trials and your setbacks in your life. That God is preparing for something big and something good. He's preparing you for service to Him and to God's people. All right, and that's where we will end it today. Let's say the Lord's Prayer.